welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. Today we're going to be talking about winterizing farm equipment. Now, I get it. If you're in a warm climate, you're like, what are you talking about winterizing? But it's not been so warm where we farm. It's been below freezing quite often here. Today's a little warmer, but it's one of those things that you don't want to let this go too long with winterizing your sprayer, winterizing equipment, because you want things to work well next spring when you start using them again, or you want them to work well throughout the winter in the cold months as you're pushing snow or feeding livestock or whatever you have to get done. So we'll talk about that on today's program. Also take your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com.
All right, before we get to the Ag PhD mailbag, and again, we are going to talk about winterizing farm equipment a little bit later in the show, I was just going to tell you about a question I had this morning. This was from an agronomist, and he asked about white grubs. And I thought, ooh, I should really mention this on the show because we talk about insecticide use from time to time here on Ag PhD. But I just want you to think about this particular case as an example. Okay, so there's a farmer who's taking CRP or took CRP out last year, planted soybeans into it, had a disaster with white grubs, and it really hurt his stand, really hurt his yield. So it was a bad deal. And so the agronomist just said, okay, how long are these grubs going to stick around? And I said, well, the problem with grubs, you got some annual ones and you got some that could be there for a really long time. And, you know, I said, number one, CRP, we usually have problems. And also right next to shelter belts, we usually have problems. But I said, let me throw one other thing out at you. I often will talk to people about the use of insecticide to say, look, even though you might not have what you may consider economic thresholds, because in my opinion, some of these economic thresholds are set way too high, what ends up happening is if you do nothing and leave bugs unchecked for years, then populations can really build, especially with something like white grubs. And then you can go in, and I was just telling this agronomist, I can remember I've had farmers in the past that I've worked with that have had bad white grub problems like this. They've gone in with a full rate of the best soil insecticides there are, whether that's Force, Counter, Aztec, whatever. I mean, the best thing on white mold or on white grubs, and also seed treatment, and still had a big time stand loss and big time yield loss in corn. So I said, that's the best I got for you. I mean, you could also throw some more Capture out there whatever. I mean, you can throw some other insecticides out there. But I said, yeah, this is a tough situation. So going back, and I just want you to think about this. If you say, well, boy, I have some CRP or I've got some ground right next to shelter belts and I've been having issues, whatever. It's so cheap to spray insecticide for $2. You can go out there in the summer when you see those June bugs, okay, or beetles like that. That's where the grubs are coming from. So when you see them out in your CRP or next to your shelter belt, wherever, you know, they are commonly at, just go spray them. And I realize you say, well, I don't want to spend money in my CRP. What's the point of spraying my CRP? The point is, so you reduce the pressure. And it's the same thing on our farm. We use insecticide every time we plant corn. Okay, so then we typically have fewer bugs when we go to beans. We spray foliar a lot of times in beans. That means then we have fewer bugs when we go to corn. Where we see more of the bug problems, it's the same thing as where we see more of the weed problems. When weeds have been allowed to go to seed, what happens? We have a lot more weed problems in the future and just cost us a lot more money down the road. And then we lose yield also. And the yield factor is much bigger than the little bit of expense to throw a little insecticide or herbicide or whatever out there. So all I'm saying here is I just want you to be scouting all the time, even if it is ground where, well, it's pasture ground this year or it's CRP ground this year or whatever it is this year. But if, boy, next year you're going to put it into cropland, be thinking about those insects and those weeds because they can absolutely hurt you down the road. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, Brian, get a soil test to start things off. This is from Brett in north central Iowa. He had asked a field to be 2.5 acre grid sampled, and unfortunately there was confusion, and they put them into zones, mixed them all together, and only got 4 samples out of an 80-acre field.
Oh, my gosh.
So he said, I'm not sure if anything's actionable here. I could go take more tests, but fall tillage is already done, so I'm thinking about acting on the things that are consistent across those zones, like low micros, low sulfur, low zinc, low copper. Copper, low boron, base saturation is all pretty low on K and also on magnesium.
Okay, I'll just give you an example off our own farm. We had a couple of new fields this last spring. It takes time to get 1 acre grids done, and I knew things are going to be way off anyway, needed a lot of fertility. So I just said, you know, in the short term, let's just go with bigger grids. Let's go with 5 acre grids this time, and we'll go halfway on our fertility program. By the way, you may never have heard this statistic before, but they say that all the time, the first half of your fertilizer you put on pays a lot better than the second half of your fertilizer. When you think about that, it'll make a lot of sense to you. But my point here is, it is big zones, which I would never do. I'd never, ever recommend that big a zone, ever. Okay, but I mean, unless you prove to me that, I've got a whole bunch of little grids or little zones that are all the same, then put them together. Sure, that's fine. Okay. But right off the bat, no, I would never do zones that big. But, you know, when we see things that are super low, your sulfur everywhere, really low, your zinc everywhere, really low, copper, boron, potassium. So I'm not too worried about it. Just start fertilizing, start doing the right thing, and you'll be fine. Soil pH also is not crazy. You're not going to do any liming there or anything like that, so no big deal. The interesting thing I would say on this is, Darren, low magnesium. And we don't typically talk about low magnesium here on the show very often.
Super high calcium soil.
I really question if it's correct. I question if it's
super high calcium.
I would send a little bit. Take the worst spots on your magnesium and send to a different lab, because to me it looks like the magnesium is abnormally low for a really heavy soil. We don't typically see that in Iowa because usually you have enough clay, which means you usually have enough magnesium. All right, we are going to talk about winterizing farm equipment right after this on Ag PhD Radio.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Downtime during spraying can lead to huge yield losses. Keep rolling with the Pentair Hypro Force Field. This pump features a unique self-regulated chamber that allows the pump to run dry while eliminating cracked seals, so you can spray longer and more reliably. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the End Zone Bin System from Farm Shop MFG.
A lot goes into keeping a precision operation moving. The inputs you choose have to deliver results. New Dallaro Complete Fungicide from Bayer offers unmatched consistency and the most complete disease control available. Your corn and soybeans are protected and yields higher even in unpredictable conditions. With Dallaro Complete, you get results you can count on to help keep your precision operation running smoothly. Always read and follow label instructions. To learn more, visit DallaroComplete.us today.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about winterizing farm equipment. Now, the part of that I don't like is the winter part in there, because that's no fun. I like summarizing farm equipment. Like, let's get it ready for summer. Awesome. Let's make sure the AC is working. That's pretty cool. Winterizing, kind of the opposite deal, but there's a lot more to it. So we got Kevin Brenneman with us right now at Case IH. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. You bet.
All right. I don't like the whole winter part of this, but I know it's coming. I know it's going to get cold. And, you know, we still rely on our equipment a lot in the winter. What are some of the things that you see that we really need to make sure we're keeping an eye on as we're heading into the winter?
Yeah, when I talk about getting equipment ready for the winter, you know, it really comes down to three main things. You know, all those conversations I've had over the years with customers and dealers, it's really making sure you've got the right fluids for the winter conditions you're operating in or storage conditions. In today's equipment, you know, it's taking care of those Tier 4 emission systems we've added to our engines. And the last one is batteries, right? We're always struggling keeping those batteries up to snuff to be able to get our equipment started and get them to handle those long winter storage seasons.
You know, we have had some questions about DEF and what we're supposed to do with DEF fluid and so forth. Talk to us a little bit about the Tier 4 and what growers need to be ready for.
You bet, you bet. So DEF, the diesel exhaust fluid, and I guess there's a couple main things to consider. You know, obviously, it's going to freeze.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing that confuses farmers, because they think, oh, okay, isn't this basically nitrogen solution that we're dealing with here? And we work with a lot of nitrogen solutions in farming. And, you know, for us, I know as soon as we started going no-till on the farm, we utilized a lot of liquid nitrogen to carry our products that we're delivering out in the field just to make sure we didn't have the freeze-up problems that we have with water. So I think that's one that maybe there's just a little misunderstanding about what's going on there with a nitrogen solution, because we definitely need that if you're running these engines, and making sure that it's in good shape is really important. I think one of the things too that we've had a lot of comments on with the DEF fluid and growers that have kind of pushed the limit on this, they've said things have come back into good solution again once they got them warmed back up. But it's one of those things that you definitely got to be aware of, because it's another thing you have to add to the list. And I know growing up, we always had a list of things. Dad was big on having a list of, I got to make sure I cross all these things off so I don't forget anything. Well, this is one that if you're working off the old list and now you got new equipment and you don't have that diesel exhaust fluid on your new list, well, you better get it on the new list, because you could have some problems if you were to leave that outside in the cold weather.
Well, that's the next thing. You know, so many people have added heated shops, just like for us on our farm, we added a much bigger heated shop a few years ago. So, I mean, yeah, we're going to operate outside in the wintertime, but we're hopefully going to have our equipment heated. So at least it starts the day in pretty good shape.
Well, that's a luxury not everybody's got though, Kevin. Oh, you still there, Kevin?
Yep, I'm here. You bet. Yeah, when you've got that equipment and it's going to be outside and in the cold, and like we were talking about, the DEF system is going to freeze. The one big thing is you've got to get that equipment started and then get a load on that engine to start building heat and putting heat into that DEF tank in order to thaw that DEF fluid so that it can start injecting it into the exhaust and doing what it's supposed to clean up the emissions.
You know, as you look at, you mentioned the right fluids, and a lot of times I think about oil and hydraulic fluid and all these things that we have to let equipment kind of warm up when we get out in those situations. What are some of, you mentioned the right fluids, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah, especially specifically with the engine, if you're going to be running, you know, in the winter season, make sure you get the right winter blend in there with a lighter viscosity so that it can start lubricating the engine. It doesn't take as long to warm up before it provides that lubrication you're looking for. And with hydraulic fluids, for our customers that run all during the winter season, the synthetic and synthetic blends do a tremendous good job of providing lubrication during those winter seasons.
Interesting. Yeah, you mentioned the battery before, Kevin, and you kind of put that out there like, yeah, everybody knows about it, but it seems like every year people have trouble with this.
I tell you, you know, growing up on the farm, it seems like every fall, the first cold day, you've got a battery you have to replace because it doesn't have the power anymore. Or right away in the spring, you get one out of storage and the battery's dead. I'd like to say that our modern equipment is better, but you know, we've added a lot of electronics, computers, programming, logic, telematics. All of it takes a little bit of power, even when the key's off and the vehicle isn't running, in order to maintain that keep alive memory. And that's hard on batteries to have a slow drain during those storage seasons of non-use. You know, the best things we can do for batteries is use them every day. You know, if you use that equipment every day, that battery will probably last longer than a machine where it sits in the shed and is not used. So I guess number one for me is, if the equipment has a battery disconnect, use it. You know, if you're going to store it for more than a week, shut off that battery disconnect. And then the other thing, if you're going to store a vehicle for a long time, battery maintainers do a great job of keeping those batteries alive. And they really do exactly, you know, what I described earlier. They let the battery drain down a little bit, they kick on, and they top that battery back up, and they let it keep cycling like that, which is what batteries like to do for a long life.
Yeah, that's a good tip. And I remember just feeding cattle as a kid and the things that we would do. And we didn't have a heated building that the tractor that was going to be delivering that silage out to the animals, it just didn't have that luxury. So we were always constantly working on that battery. And like you say, using it every day was such a good thing too.
Hey, absolutely, absolutely.
It didn't get us out of cattle feeding anyway. There's no way around that.
That's right. That's right.
You know, as you think about that, there's still some farmers that are running with harvest, and there's still some guys out doing some tillage and doing some fertilizer applications and those things. With equipment that's running out there every day, are there some more things that we need to be thinking about?
Yeah, especially if you're still harvesting and using equipment, you know, during those colder temperatures, condensation is probably one of the challenging things to deal with. So you shut that piece of machinery down, it's warm, it chills down overnight, and then you fire it back up in the morning, you can get condensation, you know, collecting inside of hydraulic reservoirs or inside the engine crankcase, because those are vented to the atmosphere, right? And that's why I mentioned fluids earlier. It takes a good oil with a good additive package in order to be able to protect that engine and keep that oil clinging to all the internal surfaces when you get that condensation and control the moisture inside that oil.
Yeah, there's just a lot of issues that come up when we get these temperature extremes. No doubt about that. Do you see some issues with off-season storage and so forth for the growers that are in the South in warmer climates, but hey, the equipment's going to be sitting for a long time?
Yeah, and that's why I mentioned the diesel exhaust fluid and our Tier 4 emission system. That seems to be the most common topic that I get into with long storage. So it's good to understand how to deal with that and take care of the equipment during long periods of storage. So one of the things about diesel exhaust fluid is when it goes through long periods of storage, you can get some of the ammonia that will crystallize and fall out of suspension. And when you start that vehicle back up in the spring, and you've got that crystallized DEF in the tank, it'll plug up the filters, right? And that's what a lot of our customers are starting to experience. So some of our dealers and customers have figured out ways to manage those long periods of storage. And I think our Canadians are probably the best at it just due to the temperatures they have to work with. But if you're in a climate where you're going to see 2 weeks in February that's below zero, I would recommend draining that DEF tank before you put a vehicle into long-term storage. And what's even better is if you can bring, you know, 2 gallons of distilled water home from the grocery store, put it in after draining the DEF, start and cycle that engine for, you know, 5 minutes, that'll flush out any of that remaining diesel exhaust fluid, that DEF, and give you a nice clean system for it to sit for those long periods of storage. In the spring, fill it back up with fresh diesel exhaust fluid, and that system will run really well.
That's a good tip. I like the idea of flushing things out just to make sure that you don't have any unneeded problems. Talking with Kevin Brenneman with Case IH. Kevin, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
You bet. You're welcome.
Talking about winterizing farm equipment on our show today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
No matter what time of the year it is on your farm, with a Bayer Plus Rewards program, earning and redeeming rewards are always in season. Because when you buy two or more eligible seed or crop protection products throughout the year, you earn $3 per acre in cashback rewards. Cash you can redeem and reinvest in your farm later in the season. That's Bayer Plus Rewards, and that's how we're helping make every part of your season, well, rewarding. Visit MyBayerPlus.com to learn more. See program terms and conditions for full details.
Have resistant weeds invaded your cornfields? Tough 5EC, manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, can help. When added to the post-emergence tank mix, Tough 5EC synergizes the effectiveness of HPPD inhibitors on key broadleaf weeds. In fact, university field trials have shown 5 to 30% increased control of herbicide-resistant Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Now that's tough on weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. You're in for a treat now. I've got a special guest on the show today, and I don't even know how to introduce Ray anymore, so I'll just say it's Ray Bohax. And Ray, you can talk just a little bit about what you're doing, because you're everywhere. You're all over the place with Idle Chatter, On the Road, the Hot Farmer Minute, Bushels and Cents, Farm Machinery Digest, but everywhere.
Hey, Darren, good to talk to you, and thanks for having me on. I guess you covered all the bases. Hey, I'm just a kid from New Jersey, from Cat Swamp Road, trying to get the word out about machinery to the ag community. But you did a great job covering all the bases. And, hey, you guys are all over the map. Ag PhD Insider, Ag PhD Radio, Ag PhD TV. You know what I'm saying?
So, well, we got to do something. If I don't keep Brian busy, he gets in trouble. So we'll just keep talking farming all the time.
All right, that works for me.
All right, Ray, so we're talking about winterizing farm equipment, and I know this is a big deal. When you think about how equipment runs on the farm, if you can minimize your maintenance costs, minimize your breakdowns just by doing some simple maintenance things, it's well worth the investment.
Oh, I know, and you're 100% correct, and that's what I try to preach. And basically, it's not what you make, it's what you keep that counts. And and preventative maintenance and putting your equipment to bed properly for storage is akin to putting your fields to bed for the winter. But I think a common mistake that people make is that farm equipment, most of it is not used all year long. So you also have to consider, even though we're getting into the winter now, you have to consider how you put things to bed in the spring, waiting for the fall or waiting for the harvest. So, but we are in winter now, so we could discuss winterizing, right?
You know, I think about our farm, Ray. The combines get done, they run into the shop, and nobody touches them for a while because it's all hands on deck doing fertilizer and tillage and tiling and all the other things we need to do before things freeze up. And I just think that a lot of pieces of equipment just get neglected, and not because we don't care about them. We're so busy and we got to move on to the next thing.
No, you're right. You are busy, but also what I have found coming from the machinery side is that we're all guilty of, you know, we think of only free cold weather impacting equipment, but we don't think of the moisture and the humidity that's there during the summertime or during the other seasons that will impact equipment so much. And that's why I'm thankful that you were allowing me to come on here and tell your audience that most people think about equipment storage, and I'll call it the NP and K of equipment storage. So they talk about checking the coolant, maybe airing up the tires, greasing it, or what have you. But I think what we really need to do is to steal a little bit of your thunder, is we need to talk about the micronutrients of putting equipment away, the micros. And the macros, I think everybody has down pat if they do have the opportunity to do it. But, you know, four things people overlook, and I'm specifically talking about equipment with engines, but this will apply to a certain extent to other apparatus on the farm. And one is doing fluid analysis to cover the intake and exhaust ports, to put a vapor barrier underneath it, and do not run the engine during the winter.
Okay, we got a few different topics here to open up, Ray, and you mentioned fluid analysis to start with, and this is one that I know for our farm we've been trying to get better at too. When, just like we pull soil tests, if we can pull fluid tests out of our equipment and take a look at, all right, what do we have there? Are we having any issues? Is there anything we can diagnose so we can get that fixed and right back into top working order? Or if we can catch a problem early, boy, it's kind of like a blood test. If you can take a blood test and they say, ooh, we got to change this or that and avoid a major problem, that's a big deal.
You touched on all the points. Fluid analysis serves two purposes. Number one, it's a predictor of what is going on in that piece of equipment, because usually you'll have telltale signs of it in the working fluid, be it an oil, hydraulic fluid, or a coolant. And all three of them need to be checked because they're just as important. But also, you know, getting back to the ROI, is that I don't like to put equipment to bed for the winter with older fluids in it. So the fluid analysis will serve the purpose of being a predictor of what's going on, but will also tell you whether the additive package in that engine oil, in that coolant, or that hydraulic fluid is still strong enough to withstand the moisture that will wick in and the acids that are in that fluid that have created from the engine running. So that's very important. And most people just want to jump into engine coolant. Most people want to just think about the coolant's ability to not freeze. But the additive package is even more important, because as that engine is sitting there, it's going to work and create an electrolytic effect with the materials it comes in contact with, which is actually very destructive to the engine. So that's why it's so important to do a fluid analysis, as you said, predictor of what's happening, and also if that fluid is still good, it does not need to be changed.
Okay, what's step two?
Step two is something that very few people do unless they're a drag racer. And I know a lot of
farmers. I was waiting for the hot rod comments here coming
hot,
in, right?
Hey, the hot rod farm has to come out someplace, right? So what you want to do is you want to cover the intake and the exhaust of the engine, and specifically if it's more than a single cylinder engine, because someplace in that engine there's going to be an intake valve open and an exhaust valve open. And as the equipment sits, even if it's in dry storage, and even if it's in some quasi-heated storage, moisture will wick its way up. And specifically, like with a combine, it's going to sit for 7, 8, 9, 10 months out of the year. The moisture will work its way up through, believe it or not, through that exhaust system, through that air intake system, and it will start to attack the cylinder walls and create a very, very microscopic rust to form, which is going to impact the ring package and everything inside that engine. Very simple to do. It doesn't have to be hermetically sealed. You could take a plastic bag and you could wrap it up with electrical tape, and you could just seal up the air intake and the exhaust, and so to minimize any moisture. And very important for something that's outside or in cold storage. and a smaller engine, let's say like on a seat tender, you could just cover the whole engine and then tie it up with a plastic bag, and that would become a vapor barrier. And also make sure all dipstick seals are intact and the dipsticks are seated. You do not want moisture to come into that engine when it's sitting stagnant.
Okay, great tip, great tip. All right, what's next?
Vapor barrier underneath the piece of equipment or the implement. If you have, even if, then again, even if it's inside storage and dry storage, you want to put it on a vapor barrier. And a vapor barrier needs to be nothing more than an inexpensive plastic tarp. You could take the tractor, the combine, the whatever it is, the planter, the tillage tool, and you could put the vapor, put the plastic tarp down and set the equipment down on that tarp. And that will stop the moisture.
Just lost Ray there for a second. Let me see if we can pull him back up. So I thought that was a good point too, putting a plastic tarp down under the equipment. At least you don't have moisture coming up from underneath. And I know I'll talk to some farmers. I'll say, well, wait a second, I'm on concrete. But yes, that concrete gets wet at certain times of the year too. And if you can at least protect underneath where that equipment is, sure, it's going to get wet underneath the tarp, but at least it's not on top of that tarp. And that's going to be one more thing you can kind of check off the list of a way you can protect that piece of equipment.
The interesting thing, too, is when you listen to somebody like Ray, just notice how detail-oriented it is. And I don't care what walk of life you're in, what job you have, what you're trying to be successful at, it just comes back a lot of times to paying attention to those details. And also, it's going to be some work. There's nothing out there where, oh, I is just going to take 2 seconds and I've totally solved this entire problem on my farm or in any work that you've got. I mean, it just requires time and effort, but you put the time and effort in and things are going to go well.
All right. And we've already had a little bit of feedback here on Twitter about, all right, where do I find more information about Ray, and does he have more articles or information that are out there? We're going to try and bring Ray right back up after this short break. But you can find him at farmmachinerydigest.com. And if it's probably easier than remembering exactly how to spell Ray's last name, but just go to farmmachinerydigest.com and you can check out a lot of Ray's posts there. And we'll, like I said, we'll try and bring Ray back up. We just had a phone connection issue. We'll bring him back up right after this short break. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
It's about time. Applied at planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind Enfuro Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Dees supply representative today.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
When it comes to effective herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Burnmaster, Scorch, and Spitfire for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We got the hot rod farmer Ray Bohax with us right now. We're talking about winterizing farm machinery. We got cut off there, Ray. Sorry about that. You were just talking about, about getting a vapor barrier or just even a plastic tarp underneath equipment. I think it's ingenious, and you're right. A lot of guys aren't doing that.
No, and it's you don't need anything more than an inexpensive plastic tarp. Like I said before, put it down, put the piece of equipment on it, if it's a piece of tillage equipment, what have you, and it'll stop that moisture from wicking in, because most damage is done from the ground up, specifically if you have a lot of thermal change. And a lot of guys may have a semi-heated shed that they keep equipment in, but they turn the heat down at night, and that thermal excursion from hot to cold is going to actually have an effect, a capillary effect, and pull the moisture out of even the concrete or the ground, and it's going to wick right into the machine. So that's very easy to do, very inexpensive. And, you know, even in the summertime, if you have something that's going to be parked for a long time, like a combine, it's not a bad idea to park it on a piece of tarp, plastic tarp. Inexpensive and not an issue whatsoever. And then the last thing I wanted to discuss was that a lot of people like to run an engine and idle an engine during the winter. And that is actually one of the worst things that you could do. Because when an engine is cold, it has 1,100% more wear than when it's fully warm. And when an engine is being idled, it takes a long time to build temperature. And also, you're not warming up the rest of the components. So, for instance, if it was a combine or a self-propelled sprayer, you're running the engine, you're building some heat in it, but then you're shutting it back off, and you're actually causing more condensation. And when, when the engine is cold, there's about 1,100% more ring wear. Case IH did a study on that about 30 years ago, and it was like 1,132% more ring wear when an engine is cold than when it's warm. And that's gasoline or diesel. And the important thing is that if you want to get the piece of equipment and drive it, get it out on the road and drive it, that's fine. You need to get all the fluids hot, and they have to be hot long enough to boil off any moisture. If you're not boiling off the moisture and you just get it partially warm and let it cool, you're making more condensation and you're making the situation worse.
Yeah, that is great advice. We're talking with Ray Bohax. You can find Ray at farmmachinerydigest.com. Lots more great information other than just winterizing, but that's our topic today. We talked about getting a fluid analysis. We talked about covering the intake and exhaust of an engine, which not many people are doing, getting a vapor barrier under equipment, and then just if you're not going to use the equipment over the winter, don't run it. Don't idle it. I like all those tips, Ray, but you have to settle a long-standing family question that we've had. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready for it. Brian is wrong.
Well, I know that already, but this one goes back even farther to someone who might even be even more stubborn than Brian. My grandpa Ooh. Nils used to, in the winter, he didn't think that it was smart to warm the vehicle up before going. He just wanted to jump in his car and go. And everyone else complained because it was so cold to be in the car. We thought, why couldn't you just warm the car up for us before we have to go? Is it a smart move to warm the car up or not?
Grandpa was a wise man. he was 100% correct for the same thing, is that on a car engine, any engine, you're going to have excessive ring wear and internal wear when it's cold. So the whole idea is that you want to minimize, you want to hasten the process, the time from when it is cold at ambient temperature to when it is near operating temperature. And the way you do that is by putting it under a slight load. You want to get into the car, the pickup truck, and you want to drive away. As soon as it has oil pressure, that you are safe for it to drive, which will be probably about a half a second to 1 second. And then also why Grandpa was smart is that he was warming up the transmission, the differential, the bearings, and everything else as the car was being driven on a pickup truck or a piece of equipment. When you sit and idle it, you need to build the same amount of temperature in the coolant to block the oil would probably, in a South Dakota winter, probably take 15 to 20 minutes with what you would accomplish in 1 or 2 minutes of running down the road. So Grandpa was very smart. He was a wise man.
It was so cold riding in the car with him, though, but I'm glad his car never broke down.
I'm not worried about you. I'm worried about the car.
And that's why we love you, Ray. Oh, man. Any other tips you want to leave us with today, Ray?
And the other thing I would say, you know, make sure if you are going to have a piece of equipment stored for a long time and it's a diesel, that you want to put some sort of winterization, some sort of additive package in it, because specifically, then again, like a combine, because it's set so long that you don't want the fuel to build microbes in it. But other than that, just, you know, keep in mind that it's a common sense approach, but if you could keep the moisture off of it, if you could use the fluid analysis, you know, use that time in the winter to find out what's going on in that equipment, so in the spring you could roll. And the vapor, those are very simple things, and it'll pay a huge, huge ROI on the long term, the longevity and the performance of that piece of equipment, and minimize your operating costs.
All right, so I got homework for everybody listening today. Go on your computer, go to farmmachinerydigest.com. You can read about Ray there, but then click on the Learn tab. You're going to learn something. Ray goes into great detail, as you just heard, as we're talking about winterizing farm equipment. Ray, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity. It was great being able to talk to you. I haven't seen you since Commodity Classic last year. So it's great to talk to you, and send my best to everyone, and you have a blessed Thanksgiving, and we're looking forward to 2021 and a good year, right?
You bet. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ray.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
You bet. Talking about winterizing farm machinery today, and you know what, Brian, here's a couple things that I picked up from Ray, is it just takes a little bit of effort up front, and you can avoid so many problems down the road by setting yourself up for success and controlling that moisture and humidity around your equipment.
When you were saying setting yourself up front and all, I mean, you went into several things there, and I thought, oh, this is a transition back into mailbag and back into raising crops, because it's the same thing. It's attention to detail, it's planning ahead, and it's following through on your plan, which is going to require some work. All right, let's jump back into that mailbag.
All right, Jesse sent in a comment. He said, having a good shop helps with winter maintenance. It's nice to work on machinery in a warm and dry shop rather than the outdoors. Absolutely. That's a critical thing. And what's interesting is I got a chance to be in the southern U.S. earlier this year, and we're talking to farmers there that had been up to field day and seen some of the heated shops up here. And the guys that are starting to do that in the south now, that's kind of a neat thing to see. And guys are like, man, it's really nice not to have the bugs and the humidity and all that stuff too. So might not just be winter you're trying to get away from. All right, got this one from Luke in Oklahoma, and he sent an article as well. And basically, the article is talking about manure, how you really can't use manure for everything that you need on the farm. You've also got to put some fertilizer with it. And he said, hey, guys, I'm not a tree hugger or anything, but I really frown on synthetic fertilizers, and I like to think of natural soil building. But as this article shows, I need to take a pill because it just ain't possible quite yet. And you're right, Luke, the balance of all the fertility in the manure and the salts and everything else might not be the perfect answer for your soil.
Yeah, and what I don't understand is why are people so worried about synthetic fertilizer? I mean, and by the way, look at a lot of the things that we're applying, potash and phosphorus. I mean, things that are mined I don't get it. I don't know why people get that concerned about it. You put on what your crop needs, the crop pulls it in, and you're done anyway. But yes, with manure, there's good, there's bad. We've got, just like everything else, we've got to use it in moderation. As long as we do, it's fine. But there is a tendency from people who have lots of manure, they have lots of livestock, to then overdo it, and all of a sudden, it is doing more harm than good. So just be careful about that.
All right, got a comment here. It's from John. He said, we enjoy your show. We've tried several things you've suggested, and this year was our best corn average we've ever had. We've been no-till for almost 2 decades. Occasionally, we do work some compacted areas. Just wanted to tell you guys, thanks for doing your show. Hey, thanks a lot, John. We really appreciate the feedback, and I know you're giving us a little credit here for some of the stuff on your farm, but hey, you're the guy that's willing to make changes. You're the guy that's out looking for new information and things that could benefit your farm. So kudos to you. Good job.
Plus, it's fun for us to just talk about some of these things. We have a lot of experience. Hopefully, we're putting it to some good use in answering some of these questions and just talking about how we can raise better crops and do it profitably and at the same time do a better job with the environment. Well, stay tuned. We've got more of your questions right after this.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burn down.
The only innovation that matters is the one I need.
With NK Seeds, their R&D program actually listens to farmers like me, so I get solutions that solve my challenges.
With the support to make them count. Because progress means pushing my potential, and success matters.
Push your potential at nkseeds.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, but still have a chance to get your call in, 844-44-AG-PHD. And if you have a question, also you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Got one from Kurt here in Northwest Kansas. He said, how do you get rid of yucca in pasture?
Okay, there aren't a lot of products that are actually labeled for this. Remedy Ultra is one. Now, Remedy Ultra is a brush killer with virtually no residual. Now, right on the Remedy Ultra label, they're going to tell you basically put it in diesel or fuel oil and have like 15 or sorry, let me step back. If you spray individual plants, then you can properly dose them. Let's put it that way. Spray in the middle of the plant. Now, personally, I think you could get some activity out of Tordon and do the same thing. Let's see. There's also Cimarron Max that would give you some activity. But yeah, one of those, Remedy Ultra, Tordon, Cimarron Max, and technically Remedy Ultra and Cimarron Max are the only two I know of that are labeled. But you will be ahead if you can individually spray them so you can really dose them up.
All right. Thanks for the question. I got this one from Jason up in Alberta, and he sent an article along here, too. Just wanted to share an article Evan Lintek with Alberta Wheat Commission and Alberta Barley wrote in this month's edition of the Grains West magazine. Just wanted to provide some perspective on how red tape in Alberta is restricting drain tile projects. And he said in Alberta, they're having trouble getting drain tile in, but Manitoba and Ontario have found ways to get it done. The Alberta government wants to reduce its red tape, but so far they still believe that it's going to have that tile is going to have a negative impact on wetlands and flooding. And so
wrong said and
we've
wrong.
Got long ways to go.
Yeah. So I mean, in terms of wetlands, can you eliminate a wetland with tile? Sure you can. But I mean, what farmers for the most part are trying to do is not drain the duck ponds. They're just simply trying to drain fields where the water table's too high. That's the problem. And when you have too high a water table, it leads to all kinds of issues long term. So bad for the crop, bad for the environment, bad for the soil, bad for the water downstream. It's just, it's all bad, 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 bad. Put the tile in the ground and you'll find out it's amazing. In terms of the flooding, that's been proven for 100 years now that you have less flooding when tile is put in the ground. Go do your homework. Come on, government. I mean, that's part of the reason why so many farmers get frustrated with the government, because there's data out there and then it's, well, maybe we should do a study. No, no. How about go read? Go actually learn something and look at the data that's been generated from the last 100 years. Flooding is reduced. And also, if let's say you're a farmer and you're trying to talk to some government person who doesn't understand this, I'd say, look, let's just take this back to the very, very basics, okay? If I'm going to put tile in the ground and I'm going to pay for it, how do I pay for it? The only way I pay for it is with increased yield, right? Okay, I think we can all agree on that, correct? Now, does it make logical sense that if I had, let's say, 200 bushel corn versus 100 bushel corn, or 100 bushel wheat versus 20 bushel wheat, the higher yielding crop is going to remove more water? 200 bushel corn is going to take twice as much water as 100 bushel corn, right? I mean, that's only logical, of course. Okay, well, if I have more yield, then where's that water coming from? It's coming from the soil, which means now there's going to be less water to what? Less water to go downstream. I mean, just think about it logically, and even a first grader can figure this out, that, hey, you're going to have a lot less flooding when you get tile in the ground in the right places.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Stephen in Idaho with us right now talking about the winterizing farm equipment. Stephen, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, good. What can we do for you?
I'm wondering if you guys have heard or anything when you're storing equipment, what you do for mice. I've heard putting fabric softeners like in your combines and stuff like that helps out a little bit, but I've also seen nests with fabric softener sheets. Is there any good thing to put in your calves and whatnot to keep the mice away?
You know,
there've been lots of products like that. Just, you know, we think about, air fresheners and those types of things. There have been some that have been used in that regard, trying to scare off mice. I think having a good mouse bait program around is pretty important, but I know exactly what you mean. They definitely can get in equipment. I don't know if I've got a perfect answer for that, but if anybody does, they could sure share it. What have you tried anything that's worked, Stephen?
I haven't. I've just, we have put fabric softeners in our older combines, you know, up above where the monitors used to be, where they'd get into the wires and everything. We're talking the 1980s, 90s combines. And sometimes it works, sometimes it didn't.
Yeah, so other things that people have said over the years, mothballs, sulfur, have more cats around the farm. That has been our answer. And cats just keep showing up. I don't know, we get rid of them, then a whole bunch of cats are back again. That usually takes care of the problem. Beyond that, it's kind of like we talk about grain bins, you know, and there are things that we do inside grain bins and insecticide, everything else. But, you know, monitoring or maintaining grain bins, it's about what you do outside that bin and keeping that all trimmed up and nice and neat. Same kind of thing with equipment. They say that when equipment is dirtier, you have more debris there, then you're more likely to have rodent infestation. So if you clean everything up well, that generally helps. Over the years, we have also around our sheds had mouse poison, but here again, you run into this issue with cats, okay? Which are you going to have, the cats or the mouse poison? You probably are not going to have both. So we have to be a little bit careful about some of those things. So lately for us, it's been more, hey, the cats have just shown up and they've taken care of a lot of these things. I don't know that I have any other super great suggestions for you.
Okay.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for the call. You bet.
All right, Brian, get this one from Rob. He said, heard about the new dicamba label. Just wondering, it says there doesn't need to be a buffer if there are no, or, oh, does it say there doesn't need to be a buffer if there are no crops or endangered species around, like, for example, for burn down applications?
Yeah, because it's buffer to sensitive crops. If there are no sensitive crops, then it's different. So, I mean, think about it. Like if you were spraying Xtend beans and you have corn right next to it that is still V5 or smaller, is there any problem if there would happen to be drift there? No. I mean, now we always want to keep things on target, but ultimately what we're after and the purpose of these labels is to prevent issues in other fields and especially other people's fields. So, yeah, there really shouldn't be a big issue. Also, the old labels of dicamba remain the same. So Banville's the same, Clarity's the same, all those things are the same. The only things that changed were the in-crop and even right before crop or burn down use for Xtend crops. So it's Xtendimax and, let's see, Tavium, which is dicamba and Dual, and then BSF's Ingenia. We are expecting a Fexapan label soon as well, but those four, you will see slightly different labels than what you have in the past.
Thanks for the question, Rob. Got this one from Trent. He said, you talk about having at least a 4% base saturation of K.
Yep.
And we've seen over the past few years, our soil tests have come back with 1 or 2% base saturation K in our 200-plus bushel cornfields.
Yep.
We aren't seeing any need for that high level, and University of Minnesota guidelines say that no more potassium is needed if we test at 200 parts per million for any yield goal that we have.
Okay. Well, first of all, Minnesota's wrong. And secondly, if you haven't done any, then we don't know for sure that it wouldn't help. So typically when we see 1 or 2% base saturation K, you'll have more lodging problems, even like the derecho. So there's going to be wind. That's the one thing we know when we're farming in the Midwestern United States. There will be wind at some point. And what I always tell people is where the worst lodging issue you have is, whether it's green snap or whatever lodging you want to call it, soil test there. And soil test where your stand was perfect. And a lot of times you're going to see a difference in potassium. But yes, we want more potassium out there. And here's the other thing that's always my pushback on this. If you own the ground, that potassium's not going anywhere till your crop uses it. So at least try some half fields. You will see over time that we're right. And it's going to impact soybeans a little more on yield than corn, because soybeans will take almost double, a good soybean crop will take almost double the potassium on a per day basis for a limited time at the peak in the middle of the summer than a good corn crop. So it's more impactful for yield on soybeans, but it is super impactful for stock quality, stock health in corn. So get those potassium levels up and at least try some half fields. You'll see.
Yeah, especially in soybeans where you've got such a big pull of potassium all at one time. It's important. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.